Hi, folks. It's Andy, the analytical preacher. I often find that when I read reports about surveys that have been done, whether national or local, sometimes the results of the surveys that get reported don't match up with what my personal experience has been, maybe in talking to people in my local community, etc. Unfortunately, one place where surveys do seem to match up with my experience and my dealings with other folks is along the lines that hope seems to be in short supply. And it seems especially maybe among younger folks, but certainly not just among young adults or young folks. Hope seems to be in short supply. And obviously when we lose our hope, then anxiety increases, stress increases, peace decreases, and it becomes a sort of self-fulfilling cycle. So what I want to do in this podcast is just try to give us a couple of reasons to have some hope, a reason to maybe regain some hope, or at least to think about the situation or circumstances, the world, maybe in a slightly different way. Now, we know, of course, that in Peter's letter in the Bible, he tells Christians that we should always be prepared to give an account for the hope that is in us. So I'm going to start there. But I also want to take a few, I guess you would say, sort of non-religious reasons that I think should lend us to greater hope as well. So let me start with the scripture, as I should, and then we'll move from there. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 15, Peter writes this: "But in your hearts honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you, yet do it with gentleness and respect." Peter has been writing in this letter about how Christians were beginning to be increasingly persecuted in the Roman Empire. And even if that era of persecution was a relatively short era, historians tend to disagree about how long it really lasted. Even if it was a relatively short era, no one denies that it was very intense, the persecution at one point that Christians were suffering, being burnt alive on stakes to light up the garden of the emperors and things like this. And Peter is going, but we have a hope. And when people see us in the circumstance that we're in and we're holding up well and we still have our hope, they're going to begin to ask you and always be prepared to do that. Now, you're going to have to continue to honor Christ in your hearts. You're going to have to continue to know that He is God, that He is holy, that He is for you, what He's done for you on the cross, the promises He's made about your future. And then when people ask you about the hope, be ready to give them reasons. But of course, always with gentleness, always with respect. So what is the reason for the hope that's within me? Well, for the most part, it's this. Jesus was very honest in setting forth to His followers. And I quote, "In the world, you will have trouble. The world has disliked certain things about me. Parts of the world have hated me. Other parts of the world are going to actually unjustly execute me." So when I say trouble, I mean trouble. "The world has hated me, the world has given me trouble," Jesus says. "And in this world you will have trouble." So our expectations are level set from the beginning. "But take heart," He says, "because I've overcome the world." This is just crazy, maladjusted humans doing crazy, maladjusted human things to you. But in the end, I win. In the end, I'm going to right the wrongs. I have overcome the world. Already, what's going to happen is so certain, I speak of it as if it's already done. I have overcome the world. I will pay for sins. I will rise from the dead. I will return to judge. I will make everything perfect. And so the fact that Jesus tells us, don't get your expectations too high or you'll be disappointed. In this world, you will have trouble. And then follows that with, "But take heart, I have overcome the world." And we look at that and we say, wow, Jesus told His disciples this and it came true. And then He told that and it came true. And then He talked about the temple would be destroyed before that generation had died off. We know that the temple was destroyed 35, 40 years after Jesus made those comments, while the generation that He spoke it to was still alive. He described how the temple would be destroyed. He described how Christians would escape that destruction of the city of Jerusalem and the temple. And all of that played out in history exactly as Jesus told us that it would happen. And so it gives us a real great confidence that Jesus has in fact overcome the world and that we can take heart even when we are being persecuted or mistreated in the world. But if you're a non-Christian, Or if you're a Christian who says, yes, that's awesome, and I do believe that Jesus has overcome the world, but there's still just some day-to-day difficulties that do tend to drain my optimism, that do increase my stress and take down my hope and rob my peace. Let me touch on a few other items in this podcast that I really think are relevant to this idea as I speak to people who seem to have no hope, who seem to have lost all optimism for today and for tomorrow. There's a lot of common themes that run through there. There's an old saying in the news business, if it bleeds, it leads, which simply means this. Negative news tends to draw in more viewers than positive news. And that was true in the old print media days when you had to have everything printed so you get your typeset and your newspaper out by 5 o'clock in the morning. And it's true today in a world of 24-hour news, digital news feeds where everything is updated constantly. If you want clicks on your digital news feeds, then if it bleeds, it leads, because negative sales, because harmful news, bad news, disasters, gossip, that's what sells. That's what gets people to click. That's what gets advertisers to pay to continue the service. And so for many of us, we are inundated. Social media feeds, the news that we consume on our tablets and so forth, on our phones, we're inundated with this bad news, with all of the bad things that happen. And generally, if you ask people, what do you think the crime rate is? What's the murder rate? How many people have been killed by guns this year? What's the this or that? They give you answers, and then you show them the actual statistics, and they're shocked. They're like, all I hear about when I turn on the nightly news is this place was robbed and this person was killed with this kind of a weapon and this country did that in that country. And then you show them the actual numbers and it tends to not be bad. Now, every murder is a horrible loss of life. Every second of war is a horrible demonstration of the worst of human character. I don't mean to make light of any of it. But if you truly believe that when I send my child out tomorrow, there's an even chance that that child's going to get hurt, kidnapped, mistreated because of their race or their gender, if you truly believe there's an even chance, well, then hope is going to be hard to come by. So I think partly we build these ideas in our mind that things might actually be worse than they are, because it's only the bad things that get reported on. Our mind hears those stories over and over and kind of creates its own narrative. And so everything from reports about the economy to reports about climate change, the media will tend to pick, and I'm not really blaming the media. It's kind of our fault. We're the ones clicking on the stories. We're the ones watching those newscasts. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change puts out this massive report every few years. And in those reports, there tends to be, here's the good stuff and here's the bad stuff and here's predictions about the future. And the mainstream medias and the cable news outlets and all the digital media services tend to pick up on just sort of the doomsday scenarios in those reports. They're massive reports. They're hundreds of pages. They're written in horrible technical language. It's difficult for us to grab that IPCC report and make heads or tails of it. So we click on a link in social media and it tells us about this forecast about how the sea is going to rise and cover New York City in 20 years. And yet that's not going to happen. It's not happened. It's not going to happen. But again, because we buy into it, they continue to sell it to us. It's what we want. When we get it, it increases our stress, decreases our hope. If you're interested in really looking at this in a deep academic way, there's a number of books I can suggest. Matt Ridley wrote a book called The Rational Optimist. Bjorn Lomborg has written books, The Skeptical Environmentalist. Bjorn Lomborg's got a book about climate change called Cool It. Steve Koonin, who worked in the Obama administration as a lead scientific advisor, has written a book called Unsettled. And all of these guys, and some of them are slightly to the right on the political spectrum, and some of them are far to the left on the political spectrum. These guys all kind of come to this same conclusion, which is we put so much bad news out there that we're freaking people out, and the world may not be as bad as it seems. And it's not just that we're bombarded with bad news. It actually gets worse for this reason. There's something that psychologists and economists speak about called the diminishing law of marginal utility. And this is basically what this says. Let's say you worked for some period of time, might be months, depending on your salary, might have taken you 2 years, 3 years, depending on your salary. But you've worked for some period of time and you've saved money, pretty aggressively saved money. And you've got $10,000 now in your savings account. If someone comes along to you and says, rate the level of satisfaction you would have if I doubled that money for you. You have 10, I give you another 10. Give me a rating of the satisfaction you would experience with another $10,000. You get a number. Then they go back and say, tell me how much dissatisfaction you would suffer if I took the original $10,000 away. And the number is always much greater. In other words, losing what we have is always worse than gaining more. Now, it should be the same, right? Gaining $10,000, losing $10,000. Either way, there's a $10,000 difference. And so it should be $10,000 worth of satisfaction to gain and $10,000 worth of satisfaction to lose. But that's not the way that the human mind works. There's this diminishing law of marginal utility. I was very happy to have my original 10. If you double it to 20, I would be happy, but not nearly as devastated as I would be if you took that original 10,000 away. The new 10,000 is not equal in value to me of my existing 10,000. And so even if we see an equal number of positive and negative headlines, we're still going to be drawn down because the negative headlines tend to take more away from our hope and satisfaction, from our peace, than the positive headlines increase our hope, our satisfaction, and our peace. It's just a quirk of human nature. And so not only does the bad tend to depress us more than the good lifts us up, we're getting more bad than good, and so we're compounding an exponential effect, basically. But I think perhaps the main reason, as I talk to individuals about their lack of hope, goes back to what I had said about Christ. Jesus did not lie to his followers. The world is not going to be perfect. In fact, Jesus makes some horrible comments. We take them as just horrible, that the poor will always be with you until I come back. You can't eliminate all poverty. You're not going to eliminate all war. You're not going to eliminate all sickness. You're not going to eliminate all bias and bigotry. Jesus says you just can't do it. The human heart is just too imperfect. And even if everybody comes to be a Christian, do you know any perfect Christians? I don't. I know a lot of Christians who wish they could be perfect. I don't know any that have achieved that status. So Jesus is not saying because the world will remain largely unchristian. No, Jesus is saying because the human heart is what it is, we're never going to be able to eliminate all of those things. Jesus was very upfront with his people. You're not going to eliminate these things. And in this world, you will have trouble. I think sometimes in the modern world, thought leaders tend to tell us exactly the opposite. And it started centuries ago with folks like Robert Owen and Karl Marx. And they began to talk about these utopian ideologies. You know, humans can perfect the world, the societies that we live in. It's because we've allowed the wrong institutions to spring up. It's because we have the wrong leaders in place that we have these problems. Jesus said, even though the world will not be perfect, and even though you will have trouble in this world, you can still have hope. In fact, Paul tells us in one of his letters to the church at Corinth that what we are left with from the time Jesus went back to heaven until Jesus returns to claim his own, that we are left with faith and hope and love. Now, the greatest of these, of course, Paul says is love. But Paul says we're left with our faith that Jesus is going to fulfill the rest of his promises like he fulfilled his first promises. And we're left with love, which is the greatest. But Paul says hope. We are left with hope. Even in a bad world, there's still hope because there's still the idea that we can have a personal relationship with our Creator. We can have personal, meaningful relationships with other human beings. We can contribute to society at large, giving ourselves a real sense of purpose and accomplishment in life. And so Jesus says you will have trouble. Paul says, yes, we will. And Paul had trouble. Paul was arrested a couple of times. He was beaten with rods a couple of times. They threw rocks at his head trying to kill him by stoning him a couple of times. Paul knew trouble. And Paul says, yet we're left with faith, hope, and love. So I don't think it's the idea that unless we can perfect the world, unless we can perfect society, there's no hope to have hope. That's not true. The world has never been perfect, far from it. And yet people consistently had hope. But today, we seem not to. And again, if you read some of these books, like Ridley's The Rational Optimist book, he makes the argument people today are far better off than they've almost ever been in history. Democracy is far more known. The medical advancements that we have, etc. We've overcome so much bigotry and bias in our world. We've not eliminated it, but we've certainly overcome a great deal of it. We've taken poverty out of the picture for hundreds of millions of people. And so if they had reason to have hope a couple hundred years ago, in theory, we should have even more reason to have hope today. Why don't we? And again, I think part of it is because we've been told perfection is attainable and maybe even perfection is right around the corner. Elect this politician, implement this policy, start this new government program or agency, and we can reach this perfection. We still need to continue to fine-tune our society until we get the dial set just right. The problem is that's not going to happen. That is hot, ridiculous nonsense. We are not going to perfect the world in which we live. And if that is our expectation, oh, then we will be bitterly disappointed. And my guess is with those dreams shattered, hope is going to run right down the drain with them. And I think that's what's happened to so many people. This is what I would say. History has shown that humans can make progress. Child sacrifice has been eliminated. Slavery has been legally in most countries eliminated. We have education for the masses. We have incredible medical health advancements. Yes, the globe is warming, but it's not going to make us extinct. We're reducing climate emissions in most developed countries. Greenhouse gas emissions are reducing in most developed countries, including in the United States. And technology will allow us to better compensate, to better deal with the emissions that go out and the warming that does happen. It's not going to eliminate humans. We may not get to net zero when you want, and the temperature may go up a degree in the next century. That's true. But that's not going to shatter our world. Democracy will continue in America, whether Biden wins or Trump wins. That's just the facts. It's just what history shows us. So history says we have reason to be optimistic. Matt Ridley is correct. Rationally, we have justification for being optimistic. What my experience is telling me is that people have conditioned themselves to expect that perfection is achievable, and now anything short of perfection devastates us, shatters our dreams, and steals our hope. And the Bible would tell us perfection in this world is not attainable. Robert Owen and Karl Marx and all of those who have followed after them are wrong. They have a very bad misunderstanding of human nature and human possibilities. And so I would argue we do have hope for the future. And you can, young people, you can have children and bring them into this world. It's going to be okay. Have the hope, because here's the thing. When you bring a child into the world and then you love that child and you invest and pour yourself into that child, or you invest and pour yourself into other people's children, which is in some ways, I think, almost more fulfilling, to be honest. You invest in the younger generation. You try to make the society you're in better, not focusing your attention on yelling at those who are different from you, not focusing your attention on screaming at those who are not doing it the same way that you do it. You just put your head down and try to make a positive contribution to society in the way that you were gifted to make it. Build meaningful personal relationships with other people. Serve people. Love them. Invest in the younger generation. You can have a real sense of meaning and purpose. Your life can make a difference. You can and should have hope. And one of these young people in whom we invest is going to come up with some way to deal with climate change or to roll back childhood cancer even 90% more than it's already been rolled back in the last few decades. And on I can go. There are reasons to have hope. Clearly, if you're a Christian, the reason is because Christ has overcome the world and Christ is coming back to get us. Even if you are not a Christian, I would encourage you to think about how much negative gossip and hate and bad news do I take in? And I need to address that issue. I need to be honest with myself that one piece of bad news and one piece of good news is still going to leave me depressed and without hope. So again, I need to try to adjust those ratios. I need to try to discount that bad news as is appropriate. And I need to remind myself every day, the world will not be perfect today and the world will not be perfect tomorrow. But I can play my small part in making it at least a little bit better, and that gives me hope for the future. Thanks for listening. Until next time, this is Andy.